Hi, I'm with Barbara Chatreau. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, Serge.
You do focusing and movement, and we're going to talk about this. So how would you introduce that combination to people?
Well, first off, I would say that the movement work, the kind of improvisational movement work that I explore, you could consider focusing in movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because the process is one of paying it, really, some often closing one's eyes or not paying really attention to the external stimuli and sensing into the body and looking for what the body wants to do, how the body wants to move, what the body is feeling, and our bodies are alive. They are constantly moving. So your body always is wanting to move, even if it's on a micro level. And sometimes that's what you might sense, is these micro levels, this very subtle level of the breath. And it can be interesting just to sense the movement of the breath, because that in itself gives people a lot of information about where they are in a particular moment, as focusers know.
So definitely where the connection with focusers is when you use the word sensing and that openness, that attunement to what happens in the body, is definitely very similar to the focusing experience. And then you introduce that notion that the body is actually, there's always some kind of emotion. And what you're doing is getting attuned to it, not ignoring it, just paying attention to its subtle movements.
Yes. Yes. So you're paying attention and you're inviting the body to move.
Mm-hmm.
You're inviting it to explore on a sensory level. And then as you're doing this, your non-judgmental mind, the kind of very light level of awareness is being with this process. You're opening up to an interest, the same interest we bring to focusing, you're bringing to your movement.
Mm-hmm.
And
so when you're talking about movement in this case, we're not necessarily talking about big movements. They can be very subtle or even stillness.
Yes, although stillness, the stillness that contains movement, so we're always breathing. People, you know, it's not, there can be a held stillness,
mm-hmm.
and that then is something to notice, because we're talking then about a kind of tension in the body. You'll sense, when we try to be still, if you sense that, if when you bring your awareness into your body, you notice a holding, a tension, a tightness.
Mm-hmm.
And you sense into that with that non-judgmental awareness, there's information, and there can also be a letting go and a change.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can have a little felt shift, like, oh, there's that, yes, there's that. And this, of course, is focusing. You know, there's that tension. You observe it with that non-judgmental curiosity, and then see where it goes. But of course, with movement, you explore where it goes more fully in the movement context.
Right. So instead of just resonating with a word as a handle,
mm-hmm.
You observe the emerging movement,
mm-hmm.
and you follow it, and as you follow it, you have an experience.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And as you follow that experience, you might have an image, you might have an emotion, you might be aware that the movement carries some meaning, not on a deep level. That there's, and you stay with that in the same questioning, you know, what's here? You know, you, as you're moving with this, I go, what is this? What's here in this movement experience? What's the story?
So what's here? What's the story? So again, that attitude of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a meaning, that can be another movement, that can be an image.
Yes, yes. It can be any of those things. And it can be an image from your life, or it can be a mythic image, which are great. You know, you might have an animal image, or in the Buto world, they work with elements, you know, an image of rain, an image of water, an image of earth. You can really contact to these archetypical primordial experiences, which are very rich.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have a personal memory, a very personal, like, oh, you know, like somebody, maybe you had some unpleasant experience, you know, or somebody grabbed you or held you, and you feel that, and you can identify a holding in your body that's related to some early experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have experience on a very personal level. You can have experience on this larger archetypical level. And you can go back and forth, which can be, you know, very, very rich. And also, there's the developmental, wanted to say something about the developmental process.
Yeah, you know, maybe you could say something about how movement is part of it.
Mm-hmm. How movement is that when baby grows, all of the neurological organization that is happening in their brain is triggered by sensory experience. So the baby's got to have sensory input in order for their brain to grow. And a lot of this sensory input is as they move and touch things and feel things and see things and experience the relationship of their body to the world and the experience of their body, of the body itself, this discovery of a body. And ideally, a baby is fully relaxed and at ease and able to joyfully discover him or herself, his physicality and relationship to the world. And when this happens, ideally, you develop a very integrated physiology. There's a natural organic way that the body organizes, the way it learns to sit up, the balance between the front of the body and the back of the body, the organization of the front of the body. There are developmental stages, and it progresses in a very systematic way.
So the development of the organized mind is something that goes in parallel with the development, the exploration of movement.
Perfect. Exactly. Exactly. The development of the organized mind goes in parallel with the physiological organization of the body. And if there are problems, and it can be if a baby has a medical problem and they somehow can't move through a particular developmental stage. Maybe they have a club foot and the energy doesn't really move through their foot the way it's kind of pre-programmed to. And that can be first a source of frustration. Or one of the first things a baby has to learn, when a baby's born, their feet are sort of curled up, so the arches are kind of turned up. Can you visualize
mm-hmm.
that? And one of the very first things a baby needs to learn is how to turn out their feet so that the foot can go flat on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stroke, there's a reflex. If you stroke the outside of the baby's foot, there'll be a reflexive response, and they'll fan out their pinky toe, and they'll turn their foot outward. And this is a very important developmental stage that enables us to stand. Now, but it takes time. It has to be given. The baby has to be given the time, you know, the months, really, for this, because the foot has been curled up for a long time inside the mom's belly.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes quite a few months for that turning out to become fully formed. And if a baby is put in shoes, if your little feet are put in hard shoes, they won't have that experience. They won't be able to really sense the full extension and flexion of and turning of the foot, because their foot is being in a little hard shoe is like being in a block of wood. And then walking will never quite be a fully satisfying experience, because there'll be something. All of this is timed. You know, we have windows when the body is developing, and it needs to develop when it's in its proper sequence.
Right. And so as a result, when you are doing work in movement with an adult, you're able to see what parts, in a way, may have not had the proper development.
Exactly. And you can go back, if something was skipped, you know, and when you explore movement improvisationally, you don't even necessarily need a therapist to be saying, oh, you need to move your foot more. There'll be something inchoate, there'll be something unformed in the feeling of their foot. And you can just, say, explore your foot and stay with that unformed felt sense.
So when you talk about the unformed felt sense, is it a little bit like this implicit movement that didn't have a chance to unfold?
Exactly. Exactly. And you don't know, because you haven't experienced it, you don't yet know what your foot wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
But as you stay with the unformed, the sense of it, the unclear sense of it, and you're kind of allowing your foot to explore, it will start to move toward the organic organization that a healthy foot wants to have.
So in adult years, it will be able to complete that process of unfolding that it was not able to do as a baby.
Exactly, exactly. And that, of course, that's the ideal, that's the hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it, as I said, it doesn't, you know, necessarily need, you know, you don't have to have that sharpened eye. You're not always analyzing, saying, oh, it needs a little bit of this. People who are very skilled, you know, might be able to kind of zero in and say, oh, you know, do this or do that. But in the context of authentic movement, you're allowing your body to tell you itself where there's a sense of something wanting, or a sense of something that hasn't yet developed.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice that people will then stay with something for a long time. You know, maybe it's a shoulder. And they might work for weeks just kind of being with the shoulder, or being with the foot. You know, for weeks and weeks and maybe months.
And for this to happen, obviously, that the capacity that has been developed in the person is the capacity to observe that inner experience and to stay with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's interesting. The nice thing, of course, is that it's every time a new little organization takes place, it's like you're discovering something. You're discovering a whole new sensory experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
to say, what? You know, that's this feeling. And then it's like where there was just grayness, there becomes some color.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that whole process, you know, it's one way to use a form like authentic movement to really generate a more organic integration, physical organic integration of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the cognitive level that you can add on to that.
So in what way would it work?
Well, you would notice there might be a feeling or an emotion attached to that. So when you discover your foot,
mm-hmm.
and you discover a connection, like, wow, you know, now I'm really standing on my feet. And then there's this, what does this feel like? What does it feel like to really feel my foot giving me support? And there's a whole new awareness of what the word support means.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as you maybe take a step and move towards something, there's a new awareness of what it even means to stand. You know, who is standing? We
mm-hmm.
stand in so many different ways, and our stance has so many different emotional qualities. And you'll discover that your stance has a new emotional quality.
So I want to just stay there for a moment, because this is not just something where you're using the word stand as a metaphor, and it's a language and it's an image, but what's really happening there is something that engages this capacity that's very much like focusing, of people noticing the experience and having this inner dialogue of just noticing it and feeling it. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Well, that's exactly right. You're noticing it, and you're feeling it, and identifying it.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's the whole thrill of identifying something, and really, maybe there's a word. And I once had this experience myself with remorse. It was more in the focusing. It was more of a self-focusing experience where I was feeling very confused, and staying with it and paying attention to it. And at some point, the word remorse came to me, and I identified what I was feeling as remorse, which, I mean, I'd known the word remorse all my life,
mm-hmm.
but it felt as if it was the first time I had the connection between my experience and the truth of that word, of its whole concept, everything the word remorse contained, was my experience.
So there was a very deep body sense of remorse.
Right, and of the cognitive connection, like that body sense had a word that described it,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it meant. So that, say, the experience of reaching, you know, we all have heard, we all know the word reach.
Yeah.
But when you reach for something in movement, someone can say, you know, I might hold out something in front of someone and say, reach first. And you see how people reach, and there's no conviction in their reach. There's no real wanting to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's a reach that's kind of weak, or not so much weak as ineffectual. And then you can see, like, when you hold something to a baby and the baby reaches for it, they reach with their whole body. You know, there's everything about them is reaching. And when we discover, oh, this is how to reach for something. You know, this is how, what it feels like when your whole body is invested in reaching. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also it's a feeling that we can bring into reaching for anything, you know, reaching for a personal goal, reaching for you know, reaching for a degree, reaching for, you know, your sense of this is something I really want, and your whole body feels it.
Right. So the experience there is that as your body is organized in the act of reaching,
mm-hmm.
You have the experience of whether it's going to be something that's weak and ineffectual or something that engages your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
And then that experience of how engaged you are gives you a different meaning, a different experience of life that you can carry in other endeavors.
Exactly, exactly. So once you've really felt reach in your body, and also then you can tell if you really want something or not. Because if you know what reach is, and somebody's saying, well, do you want, you know, do you want to go to medical school, or do you want to be a potter? And you might say, oh, I really want to go to medical school. But your body isn't doing it. And of course, this is something we do in focusing all the time, that felt sense. But here, what I'm clarifying is exactly the experience of your body, the integration of your body, that you, what it is that you're identifying in your body that tells you that you want something or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you can feel your body, you can feel yourself reach for something. You know, we have these mirror neurons. So that even if you're not actually standing up and reaching for something in a full-bodied way, there is, the brain can still organize that process. That the mirror neurons can organize that process in the brain without the body actually doing it, once the body has the experience.
Right. But so if you are not sure, it's maybe the you haven't had fully that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the standing, the holding your arms in front, that, you know, the experiencing the posture of reaching is going to you know, calibrate the image you have inside of reaching.
And if you don't have the experience in your body, you're just confused all the time.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you want. You can't tell. You can't really tell what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because you haven't really felt that experience. Which is why it's so important that we allow little children to have the experience of reaching and moving towards something and not restrain children so much. Children are restrained. So they're physically restrained so much in our culture, and as a result of that strength, it weakens their capacity to reach into the world.
Yeah, and so what the movement does is, in that state of awareness, to notice when there might be moments where you actually are restrained instead of following this implicit movement all the way to the way it would want to unfold.
So, I'm sorry, you're saying you might notice where you feel restrained.
Where you feel restrained as opposed to letting the movement unfold.
Yes, and then you would just pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, you know, well, what wants to unfold? You notice the restraint, and then what wants to unfold? And you can go back and forth and play with it, which is why it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to... You need to spend time acknowledging the restraint as well as the moving forward.
Yeah. So another thing that maybe we could touch upon, Barbara, is the notion of the witness.
Yes.
You know, just that seems somewhat similar to the function of the listener in focusing, but might not be exactly the same.
It's very similar. The witness in authentic movement, as with focusing, you know, reflects, well, the witness in authentic movement is slightly different than in focusing, because the witness reflects back their own experience.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting is when you're really paying attention to somebody's movement. You know, again, because of these mirror neurons, you know, there's a sensing in yourself that can be very close to what they're experiencing. You need to be careful that you're not interpreting and you're not imposing your experience on the other person. But almost inevitably, the experience that the witness relates is useful and interesting and brings the witness and mover closer. It creates an intimacy. It's really a lot about developing intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And intimacy in a trusting, loving context.
I think there is a little difference between both in the sense that the listener in focusing is going to, you know, parallel the words,
mm-hmm.
and say put himself or herself a little bit out. But the witness might be saying something about my experience is that so and so. So it's not necessarily something that's about necessarily echoing the...
Yeah, that's true. I actually don't myself do a lot of authentic movement style witnessing,
mm-hmm.
because what I like to do is allow the movement to see what the movement has awakened in the person and then go into focusing.
Mm.
So that, because having spent maybe 15 or 20 minutes moving, usually there's some new information that movement has awakened. And it can be a very fruitful stepping off point to go into focusing.
Yeah. So in a way, priming the person for that sense of not just connecting with what's inside, but also of already the experience of all these shifts that keep forming as they move.
Mm-hmm. So they don't have to go back and say, oh, this happened and that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But where has it brought them to? And then you just continue. And the images or, you know, the whole... You're then adding the whole layer of being able to clearly articulate your experience. And to me, being able to verbalize clearly your experience is very important. That's like the foundation of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So moving then from the body, you know, into the mind, well, as of course you do with focusing, there's a back and forth. But bringing that element of focusing to the movement, I think is really important, because a lot of movers don't know how to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, oh, well, my movement is everything, you know, and that's it. But they haven't tried to bring in that cognitive element of identifying their experience. Whether it's an image or it's an archetype, they feel that the movement is more important than the words.
Right. Whereas, the part that is actually one of the maybe essential characteristics of focusing is that resonance between something that's inchoate and something that is actually more of a symbol.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is so important, that resonance, because... It's a very important part of our human nature to have this capacity for thought.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't have it, when it's not well developed, it's very frustrating. And I find that I teach in the community college, and I see that a lot with the young people, that their capacity to clearly articulate their thoughts is limited. And they're sad about it. They don't know they're sad. They can't say that. But there's something I can feel. This failure to really be able to express themselves the way they want to be seen and heard.
Mm-hmm.
So developing this relationship, especially in relationship to the body, where the body is helping you, is so important.
Yeah. So, Barbara, as we're finishing this conversation, is there anything that you would want to, you know, to add or to end this with?
Just to say that the idea of that so often reiterated focusing of moving forward is something that it's in our fundamental physical development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the moving forward starts from the moment we're conceived. And in movement, we're sensing into our this natural primordial process. It's just to emphasize moving forward is so inherent in our nature, as of course, you know, Jean knows and has said, but that it's inherent in our biological organization. And I wanted to say a little, just a word about emotion and affect.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
When sometimes in movement, one of the things that I encourage people to explore is facial expression. And we don't usually, you know, moving is usually, you know, the whole body, but in playing with the face, and the face has more muscles, I think there are more muscles on the face than on the whole rest of the body, but there's some huge number of muscles on mm-hmm. the face. And there's a tremendous amount of information, because everything, every emotion is linked to some facial expression. So in playing with facial expression, affect, you discover and explore emotions, like, oh, this is what this emotion looks like. This is like telling, to practice, when people practice smiling,
mm-hmm.
there are so many ways to smile, and looking for all the different sensory experiences of smile.
Yeah, and this is not experiencing smiling in order to see what will be more photogenic, but more of a sense of noticing what happens inside.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's the inner feeling of smiling. Like, you know, your eyes can be closed. What does this smile feel like? You know, what is this smile? And you might, you have your eyes closed, but when you smile, a whole, you know, image might come to you of a context within which that smile emerges.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very interesting. Yeah, that's a wonderful exploration.
Yeah, so in other words, that sense of, you know, we're all interested in moving forward, and you're suggesting that we actually try to do that a little literally in using movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Barbara.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.